called The Black Man Is God.
Yeah, the God.
It's called The Black Man Is God.
Gotta next make sure album. The
this is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got
you
this
me?
Idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all this fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
Huh?
You really do?
Huh?
Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends. Rest in peace, Pop's a legend. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up. Who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like this. Never make me think wrong. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight world fast enough to stop me.
What's up, world? This is Jay Hicks back with the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. It's been a little bit since I've spoken to y'all. I apologize for that. I've been going through some changes here on my end. I don't know if the acoustics sound different to y'all at all, but I bought a new crib, you know, so I'm in a recording in a brand new place for the first time. So I apologize if the sound is any different, and the sound quality that is. You know, I know the sound of my voice is lovely and magnificent on the mic. I already know that, but I'm just talking about the acoustics. You know, if y'all notice any differences, just holler at your boy, let me know. But again, this is Jay Hicks, the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We have a very, very special podcast guest, and I say that all the time when we have a guest, but we got a great guest for the show today. I'm very excited to have him on, but before we get into that, I just want to blow through the housekeeping items, you know, that we normally talk about. Obviously, the website is hiphopsportsreport.com. Go check us out. We have our football preview that Kenneth Hicks and Anthony Houston did a fantastic job on, and we got all of our picks for the NFL season out there on the site, so go ahead and check that out. We're still doing the 1996 recap in hip-hop, so again, go ahead and check out that recap that we did, that three-part, including our last podcast that we did with Kenneth and Vince Hicks. And again, you can find us on Twitter at hip-hop sports, or excuse me, it's at HHS Report on Twitter, and facebook.com/HHS Report. You guys know where to hit us up, and of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. Now, I wanted to get through that really quickly because I wanted to save as much time as possible for our guest today. I'm very happy to have this gentleman on the podcast. This is a former NFL wide receiver, actually, for the Indianapolis Colts. He also played at The Ohio State University, where he was a wide receiver and also a five-time Scholar Athlete Award winner. He's also won the United Way Color Me Excellent Award. And he was a member of the 2002 Ohio State National Championship team. Please welcome Mr. Roy Hall to the podcast. Roy, how you feeling today?
Feeling well. Thanks for having me on, big guy.
No doubt, man. I appreciate you coming and taking the time to chat with us today. Now, I'll explain to our listeners the connection real quick. You and I went to high school together, and you graduated a year ahead of me. And I still think back to when we were in middle school together at Memorial Junior High School in on the east side of Cleveland and in Lyndhurst, Ohio, to be exact. And I remember I was in the seventh grade, you were in the eighth grade. I was struggling to get noticed by the coaches. And then there was this other kid on the other side of the field that was like almost 6 feet tall back in the eighth grade that was, you know, kind of lanky, but you could still see he had a frame that he was going to fill out more. He was the fastest dude on the field. He was elusive. He got all the attention from the coaches because he was the best player out there, so rightfully so. And that was you. And I was on the other side of the field like, damn.
Like, that guy's got it. He's got it going on, man. He's got it all. Like,
I think he might have a shot. And lo and behold, you made it, man. You made it. Went on to Brush High School, did great things for the high school program, and ended up going to Ohio State, man, and then on to the NFL. So we're going to get into all of that and a bunch of other stuff I wanted to talk to you about. And then thinking back to the time in high school, I remember the rumor at the time was that either before you went to Brush or at the time when we were already at Brush or something like that, that you were getting recruited by St. Ignatius, which is a private high school on the west side of Cleveland near downtown. It's a major football powerhouse. Is that true that you were recruited by Ignatius?
It actually wasn't Ignatius heavy on me. It was actually St. Peter Chanel. And so in the eighth grade, it was pretty much a done deal for me to go to Chanel. And at the time, Chanel was pretty good in basketball and football. They had Brian Swift playing basketball, who he was kind of their top guy in basketball. But then Brandon Bam Childress, who ended up being one of my teammates down at Ohio State, was Mr. Football down at Chanel. But then he also was a basketball fan. And so Coach Jeff Rotsky was the coach over there at the time. And, you know, it wasn't him necessarily pursuing me and trying to pull me illegally or nothing like that, but I was really interested in going to Chanel because the majority of our eighth grade team, Justin, they were thinking about leaving anyway. So we had probably about 50 guys on that eighth grade team, and of the 50, we only had 21 guys that ended up playing freshman ball at Brush High School. So I had got my uniform together. I had got me some Clark Wallabies. I had some Wallabies, man. I was ready to go and get in that uniform at Chanel. I was ready, man. And then I actually had a coach with a conversation with Coach Gary Waite. And Coach Waite was a health teacher and PE teacher over at Memorial. And he said, look, man, like if you just work hard and you do what you're supposed to do, it doesn't matter what school you go to. And recruiters and the colleges will come calling if you just stay the process, man. And so... He got me to just say, like, stay at home, man. You know, don't worry about all that stuff. And his words and that loyalty. And it's him just taking – he was really the only coach to really have that conversation with me, believe it or not. Nobody really said anything. Nobody came down from the high school and said, you should go to Brush. But it was Coach Waite in the eighth grade that told me, man, you should go to Brush High School and stay at home.
Well, I think I can speak for the entire Brush High School in South Euclid Lyndhurst community when we say thank you, Mr. Waite. I remember Coach Waite. He was my conditioning and weightlifting teacher back, I think it was in 10th grade. I had him for that. So that's a little surprising, though, that nobody from the high school saw the talent in you and decided to say, like, hey, you know, this guy might get poached by one of these elite programs in the area. Like, we might want to try to hang on to him. That would be a good look for us. That's a little surprising, but... And then, you know, you played 4 years at Brush, and then obviously the recruiting process began. But I don't want to get too bogged down into that part of your story just yet. I actually wanted to jump to something that I know is extremely passionate about. And that's why I kind of wanted to begin things. So we'll go back to the chronological side of things. But you are, and I failed to mention this in the intro, but you are the co-founder and president of the Driven Foundation. And I see you on social media all the time doing wonderful things in the community. And this has been something that it looks like it's something that you're extremely passionate about. And I kind of wanted to get a feel for exactly what the Driven Foundation is, what their message is, and how you got involved in that work.
Well, it's really just about using your platform, using whatever you have, using what you've been blessed with to help other people. And a lot of people think that you have to have a certain level of status or accumulated a certain amount of money or whatever it may be, recognition in the community to give back, and that's not so. I believe we're on this earth to help people with everything that we have. So no matter what level you're on, no matter if you're a CEO or you're just working for somebody or you're just starting your business or you're just graduating college or you have no money in the bank right now, like, that's not an excuse to not use your gifts and your talents and your know-how to help the people around you or to influence the people below you in high school and middle school, elementary school, whatever it may be. I think so much in life, man, we just get caught up in ourselves. We get caught up in our own goals and dreams and what we want to do, our own motives and agenda. And we fail to realize there's people depending on us to be able to give back no matter where we are. So you think you have to make it to give back, but in the process of going to the top or getting to the top of the mountain, you should be pulling people with you. And so as a visual, you know, if you're bringing people with you as you're going to the top, when you get tired, man, those people underneath you can push you forward. And when they get tired, you can pull them with you. And so, you know, using my platform as a former NFL player and former Buckeye to serve and to give back and to position people to be able to accomplish something significant in their lives is what I'm all about. And so just growing up, you know, with some challenging times with my mom and dad not being around and some different things we went through at when I was a kid, even before I moved to the Southeast Linhurst School District, I just remember those moments. And I also remember not having a lot of people to help us and to pour into us. And so I always wanted to be that guy. And so Driven, really what we do, we got three main principles: persistence, never give up, resilience, get back up, and then assistance, help others up. And so the process is when you get down, don't tap out, don't throw in the towel, and then get back on your feet. And once you're back on your feet, then take your hand and stick it out and assist in helping others back on their feet. And so we try and promote those three principles through our outreach, through our special events, mentorship programs, food outreaches. Over the last 5 years, we've been able to feed over 4,800 families a week's worth of food. If you do the math on it, man, we've given away over 550,000 pounds of free food to Columbus and Central Ohio families in the last 5 years. Had our back to school blast event in a small partnership with Columbus Christian Center. It's really their event, but we try and just add to it as much as we can. But we help pass out 2,100 backpacks full of supplies. I'm in four or five middle and elementary schools doing mentorship programs with young men and at-risk teens. So, you know, that's what it's about, man. Just using our platform for a purpose outside of entertainment, man. And it's been a lot of fun. And so the list goes on and on of what we do. A lot of motivational speaking things, a lot of traveling, but it's just about helping people, man, get back in the right mindset to be successful.
That's incredible, man. And I echo those sentiments. I volunteer myself in the community that I live in with the 100 Black Men of Central Illinois. So the 100 Black Men obviously has different chapters all throughout the country. So I'm a member of the Central Illinois chapter, and we do mentorship as well. And our Mentor for Life program is something that's really important to me, where we reach out specifically to young men in our community and try to teach them those same values and principles that you speak of. Was giving back something that was always a part of you? Was that like from instilled in you at a young age? Because it's something that it's always been important to me. We actually have a section on our website that focuses specifically on giving back, because a lot of people are not aware that many athletes and rappers, specifically African-American athletes and rappers, are out here doing wonderful things in the community. That stuff doesn't get publicized as frequently. So that's something that I kind of wanted to highlight on the website. But is that something that was always important to you? When did you realize that that was going to be your calling in life?
It actually wasn't that important to me until I got to Ohio State. I think Coach Jim Tressel did a great job of implementing a system that wasn't necessarily just about football. And he was huge on building character. And so, you know, guys would have to rotate shifts and rotate having the opportunity to go speak at elementary schools and read books to kids, obviously engaging with them and promoting literacy, and then turning around and making hospital visits to the James Cancer Hospital down here, to Children's Hospital, and seeing how you could leverage the Blocko and leverage that Ohio State logo to make a difference, and really a tangible difference, like an actual impacting moment for these kids and these families. And so it started there from an outreach standpoint. And then once I got to the NFL and saw a lot of the great things that a lot of those athletes, Peyton Manning, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, to name a few, were doing in their own communities, I thought to myself that I knew I needed to be doing more, and you have to be purposeful about it. A lot of times athletes will get people to run their organizations for them, which makes sense while you're out there catching footballs and playing on a national stage. But once your career is over, I think it's our responsibility as athletes and just whoever's running your own organization to implement yourself and to get involved on the day-to-day activities so you know what's going on and you can kind of share your vision and dictate which route your organization goes through, man. So it was the tutelage from Coach Tressel, and then being around Coach Dungy and those guys and seeing how we could really make a difference with our platform. So that's kind of where it happened once I got to college.
And your former teammate Antonio Pittman works with you on the Driven Foundation as well, right? Former Ohio State running back, is that right?
Antonio Smith.
Antonio Smith, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So Antonio Pittman played. Yeah, we all played together, but there's no words. I mean, people mix those guys up all the time. But Antonio Smith was number 14, played defensive back. He actually was a walk-on at Ohio State. He was a walk-on, but then he earned a scholarship, I believe, after his junior year. Ended up becoming a Jim Thorpe Award semifinalist. Went on to play with the Colts and the Lions and the Bengals. And he had a mechanical engineering degree, and so I was a full-time mechanical engineer. So he's doing big things down here in the city as well.
That's pretty impressive to be a walk-on at Ohio State. My God.
Tell me about it.
You got to be something special to be able to walk on at Ohio State and then turn it into a professional playing career. That's impressive. And so did you guys founded Driven together, right? Was that like a joint endeavor that you started on your own? Like how did the creation of the Driven Foundation come to pass?
It actually, to make a long story short, Antonio had his own foundation and he was doing his thing. And then the Driven Foundation at the time was called the Roy Hall Driven Foundation. And, you know, we were doing pretty much the same work and we collaborated on every project together. We collaborated on events together. And then we just kind of looked each other in the face one day and said, look, man, like, why are we basically doing the same thing under two different umbrellas? And so we decided to come under one house. Obviously, I dropped my name off of the Driven Foundation, and we just kind of came together and collaborated to go from obviously the Roy Hall Driven Foundation to just the Driven Foundation, and with the same mission, the same plan, and the same energy to get change going on in these communities, and using again our platform for a purpose, man. And it's been great. It's been great.
That's really dope, man. And the one other thing that I've observed from afar, you know, just from us being connected on social media and things like that, is your ministry is something that's really important to you as well. And I'm curious as to where that came into play, you know, you trying to live a Christ-like life, where that specifically became a major part of your life, and then how then the Driven Foundation kind of influenced that, or was it the other way around?
Well, I think the origin of my faith and my belief in the Lord, it stemmed from Ohio State. I mean, the greatest thing Ohio State ever did for me was allow people in the facility to orchestrate chapels and Bible studies. And so that position of Tom Rohde, who was our team chaplain and the head and lead of our Campus Crusade Division and Athletes in Action down at Ohio State, you know, developing a relationship with him led me to develop that relationship with the Lord, with Christ. And so that's the greatest thing that I've been able to take from Ohio State, is that relationship with Christ that was established and built and formed inside of me at The Ohio State University. And then after that probably comes my degree, and then after that comes my national championship, and then after that was just being at a university that I could position myself to live out a dream and make it to the NFL. And so that faith and belief was developed there. So many challenging things to come across your college career, different temptations, different people harping on you and trying to influence you, and to be able to have a conversation with an individual and to hear them out, and for them to not press or push or force quote-unquote religion on me, but putting me in position to make a decision on whether or not I want that to be a part of my life. And it was just a heck of a journey, man. And it really, it's not so much about religion as it is about relationship. And a lot of times you hear that, where it's not about rules, it's not about regulation, it's not about laws. It's about an individual commitment to perfect and be better, and to live a life that's not about you, and to give people hope and to instill hope and to show people that no matter what adversity that you're going through, that you can use that adversity for your advancement. You can use that adversity to your advantage if you just don't give up. And so when you're connected to something bigger than you, you'll have results bigger than you, and you'll be able to overcome the things that will force you to quit. You'll be able to overcome the issues and the challenges and the difficulties that are bigger than you. And so when I was at Ohio State, you don't lean on yourself to get through. You lean on your teammates. And in life, you don't lean on yourself and your knowledge and your know-how, and just because you was the smartest person in your class, and just because you got all the ideas, and just because, you know, you got a doctorate or you got a PhD or whatever you think you have that makes you, solidifies you as a smart human being. Yeah, when things get challenging and cancer strikes your family or you lose your job, you're not going to be able to lean on Barnes & Noble self-help books. You're going to have to go to a source that's bigger than you and rely on that foundation. And so being connected to the Lord, man, is not necessarily about me being preachy, and it's not about me thinking I know more, and it's not me thinking I'm better than anybody. It's just knowing that I am absolutely nothing by myself. And so that if I want to become something great, I have to be great in him first and allow him to dictate what I do and how I do it and directing my steps. And so going that route has allowed me to do unconventional things with the Driven Foundation, maybe without the support that most people think that I would need, and maybe without the money and financial backing that people would think that I have. I've been able to touch and reach many a lives because of that foundation in Christ, because I don't depend on people. And, you know, God is my source. Everything else is just a resource, but God is my source. And so I may have to make a decision that most people would think is a bad decision, or most people think is not smart, or whatever it may be. But if I'm being guided by a source that's powerful and more has more wisdom than anybody in this world, then I don't really care what people think. And so it allows me to be me without regret. It allows me to be me without holding back. And so Ohio State did that for me. And so the Driven Foundation just echoes that passion, echoes that backbone. And so I don't use Driven to push Christ on people, but I allow Driven and the service and the love that we present and the hope that we push in all of our events of helping people, all people, I allow that to be a reflection of what I believe and who I believe Jesus to be, man. So that's kind of where everything kind of fits together. It's very, it's so much synergy and so much harmony with the two, because you would think they would cross over and cancel each other out. Like, you can't get in the business world talking about Jesus, and you can't be in the church talking about my product. And so, but it doesn't work that way. If you're just living out for him, man, he just makes it, balances the scales and makes everything work out the way it's supposed to.
Powerful, man. Take him to church, Roy. Take him to church one time.
Man, just trying to take him to a relationship, man. Just a relationship, man. That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
I feel you, man. And one other thing that you mentioned a little while ago that I kind of wanted to come back on, as far as the mentoring piece, because I talk to kids all the time, like I mentioned earlier. And I can remember we had a mentoring session last year where we went around the room. It's about 20 kids in the room, and we asked every kid what they wanted to be when they were adult, when they were an adult. And now these kids were between, for the most part, they were between 7th grade and 12th grade, right? 7th grade to 12th grade. We asked them what they wanted to do when they grew up, what career they wanted to have, what aspirations that they had. And I'll tell you, man, every one of those kids said they wanted to go to the league. All of them. Like, they all said they wanted to either go to the NBA or the NFL or both. And maybe there was a couple that wanted to be rappers, you know what I mean? But we had to, like, really force them to think about their career outside of just athletics. Like, when did you start thinking about your post-playing career? And then, like, how was that a difficult transition for you?
Generally, you know, just typically, but generally speaking, most people gravitate towards what they see on a daily basis as being successful. And so rapper, entertainer, professional athlete is what society has deemed as being a success. Being the president of the United States sounds good, but when you start looking at the dollar amount that they make a year, $300,000, $400,000 a year, and obviously you're the president of the United States, but they're like, man, that's not really, like, they're running the nation, but I don't want to do that. I look at athletes, or I look at entertainers, or I look at rappers as being free to do whatever they want, having a lot of money. You can say what you want. You can do what you want. And everyone knows your name, and everybody wants to be you, and everybody wants to be around you. That's what the perspective of the young person is, because of how much hype and how much edification that those three groups get. And so, especially when you're talking to young black kids, they're like, that's what I want to be, because they're not exposed to the many different opportunities that there are in the world, which is why our Champions Training Camp with the Driven Foundation, we do a business tour every summer, and we about 15 to 20 kids to 5 or 6 different businesses around the city of Columbus to expose them to the different layers and different levels of occupation and job availability and job opportunities that they could possibly have. So when you take them to the news station, it's no longer, hey, that's just the news station, but they see there's 50 or 60 or 100 different job opportunities to exercise and to show their talent and what they can do. And so if you're a graphic designer or you like, maybe you just like talking in front of the class, it's no longer I hate doing presentations in my sixth grade or my seventh grade class. It's no, I'm preparing to be able to talk to 200,000 people or a million people every day on the 11 o'clock news. And so you want to expose them to different things. And it's really just lack of exposure. If all they do is listen to rap music, they're going to want to be a rapper. If all they do is watch the NBA or NFL, or watch Ohio State Buckeyes, that's all they're going to want to do. If all they do is go to the movies every weekend, that's all they're going to want to do is get on the big screen. And so look at the people who have the most followers on Instagram and on Snapchat and on Twitter. Those are the people that youth want to mimic. And so those people, 24 million, 17 million followers, 15 million followers, or you put a video up and you got 500,000 views. That's what those guys want. And so the teacher and the principal and the administrator that's making $100,000 a year, they don't have that type of fame. They don't have that type of lifestyle, and it seems boring. But the reality of the situation is your chances of making it on one of those levels is slim to none. And so the only thing that you can do is to go into those schools when you're mentoring them and meeting with these young people, young men and young women, is to show them like there's other opportunities and you can live a great lifestyle. Because if mom and dad and their household is only bringing in 25K or 30,000 a year and you're living in poverty or under the poverty line and, you know, leaning on government assistance, in their minds, you know, anything above that is prosperity. And so if you introduce them to a six-figure job, it might not be in the NBA, but if you put an administrator or whatever it may be, you can live a heck of a life. And so that's what you want to expose them to. But I think we do too much telling them that they should think outside the box instead of literally taking their hand and showing them, like, this is what you can do with your talent to sing or dance or to write or to do stories or whatever it may be.
Right. And in your case, obviously, it was to organize the fellowship and to give back. So, we've been talking for almost 25 minutes and we haven't even really gotten to your playing career yet.
We're going to have to do two sessions.
Man, listen.
I mean, there's enough material here to do two sessions. You've had a lot of experiences. And I was just, you know, thinking back on the knowledge that I had of you, and then also looking back, just doing some research, you know, as a good podcast host, I would be doing myself a disservice if I didn't do some research. And I'm just thinking, like, man, there's all these other topics that I wanted to explore with Roy. So going back to your recruitment with Ohio State, so Tressel, I believe, recruited you, did he not?
Yeah, Coach Tress recruited me. Coach Cooper recruited me as well. My sophomore year is when I kind of got on the map. My sophomore year, Brush had like 42 catches for like 700 yards, and I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 touchdowns or whatever it was. But that was the first year I kind of got on the map and went to a couple camps the summer before my sophomore year. So a couple other Big Ten schools had offered me scholarships already going into my sophomore year, and Ohio State kind of saw and started taking interest in me. And then when Coach Tress got the job, me heading into my junior year is when they started recruiting me pretty heavy.
And what was that like? What was it like to have letters coming to the house, to have coaches calling up the house, to have, you know, a little bit of a spotlight, you know, local media is starting to get at you a little bit. What was that experience like to be 16, 17 years old going through that and then having to make that decision that was a major life decision? And just listening to how much you've spoken about Ohio State and how highly you've spoken of Ohio State, the Ohio State, I should say, to this point. Obviously, it was a life-altering decision. So what was that like going through that process? And then how and why ultimately did you choose the Ohio State University?
Believe it or not, it wasn't stressful. I think it's always interesting to see when success comes to you, how it changes the people around you, because they expect for you to change. And the things that you've been doing your whole life, people start to look and nitpick at it. You know, I wasn't I'm an outgoing, like, talkative guy when I have a position to do it, but I'm not really like the life of the party. Like, if it's 100 people in a room and I walk into the room, unless you give me a microphone, then I'm just gonna kind of stay in my lane. I'm kind of quiet. I'm not gonna talk to a lot of people unless I know you. And believe it or not, if I don't know those other 99 people, I'm gonna be extremely uncomfortable. So I'm not a guy that, hey, I'm gonna have a ton of conversation or whatnot. And in high school, I wasn't like that. I just kind of kept to myself, not because I was cocky, not because I thought I was better than anybody. I just didn't have nothing to say, man. Like, I didn't even, you know, I remember my books, man. you know, I was good academically, graduated Brush. I had like a 3.86 GPA or whatever it was. You know, like I wasn't like thinking I was big time. I just kept to myself. Like I really wasn't a Rob Lott type guy. A lot of my friends were those entertainment type guys. One of my best friends, Rob Wilborn, and my guy Jamal Boyd. Like those guys were like more like flamboyant type guys. And I was just trying to fit in. Like really, like I looked up to those guys. So, you know, I didn't have my own style. I used to look up to the upper class and to figure out how to dress and what was popular and what you're supposed to do with your clothes and your shoes. And I, you know, I wasn't that guy that was up on all that stuff. And so
it was fat farm and Air Forces, man. That's what it was.
Well, there you go. Well, see that, but once you get your forces, you got to figure out how to lace them. You got to figure out how to rock your jeans. Do you cuff them? Do you not cuff them? And if you don't know how to do it, you got to look at the people around you. And so
right.
It was just, I say all that to say that, when I start getting recruited and called out of class and, you know, you got coaches showing up and you get to leave third period because you got, you know, somebody from Notre Dame there, somebody from Michigan or Ohio State in the building and everybody's, oh, Roy, and this, that, and, you know, names in the paper. And people around you start looking at you like, he's cocky. He think he's sweet. He think he this. He think he that. And I'm like, I don't think anything. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going through it like everybody else is. And so the recruiting process for me, it was just a letter would show up. You know, if it was a school I really liked and I thought was big time, you know, it made me smile or whatnot, you know, but I knew in my heart that if Ohio State offered me, that's where I was going to go. I mean, that was the goal. That was the dream. And so, you know, having like the thing is when you're getting recruited, when you're playing all three sports, like you don't really get caught up in it a lot because you're not in one lane. And so I encourage young athletes all the time, like play as many sports as you can. Like, I was a basketball player. Like that's mm-hmm. in my mind. When I was going to Chanel, I really wasn't even thinking football as much as I was thinking basketball. I knew mm-hmm. I was going to play football, but I was thinking basketball. And so I take that back. No football coach came down to talk to me to come play football at Brush, but Dave Alenek, who was the head basketball coach, came down to try and get me to stay to play basketball. And so at Brush, when I was there balling, like I was better statistically, I was better in basketball. I mean, I was first team all state Division I in football and basketball. I mean, I was averaging 24 a game in basketball, but I just was 6'2". And so I was going to the league at 6'2", but 6'2", 200-plus pounds as a receiver is an NFL-caliber type frame. And so that recruiting process was fun at times, but then it wasn't because people start looking at you funny and teachers start looking at you funny like, you know, I'm not letting you out of class to go. What do you mean you're not going to let me out of class? Like, what are you talking about? What? You know what I mean? Like, what? Why are you mad at me that they calling me down? Like, you should be excited about this. I'm still going to get an A in your class. I got an A now. You know what I'm saying? So different things like that just started happening. And so it kind of divided some people. Like, some people were like, man, you know, you don't deserve all this hype. And the other half was happy for me. And so it was a lot of fun, though, just going through it and sorting through, you know, what you're looking at academically and where you want to go. But Ohio State just gave me the best opportunity, and it was only 2 hours from home.
So that's what it was. That was the biggest distinction as to why you ended up at Ohio State. Was there any other schools that was in the mix that was in the running? Like, what was your? I remember you had a press conference in the library or in the gym. One of those two.
You had the hats
on the table. I remember that. I think it was it Iowa?
It was a Michigan hat on the table, maybe like a Georgia Tech hat, but that was only because those were the cheapest I could find at Liz at the time. And so we had the Ohio State hat that was a fitted hat, and then I just picked up a couple of other schools. But really, you know, I could have went anywhere in the nation. I mean, anywhere from Miami, Florida, Alabama offered me, Notre Dame offered me, Stanford offered me. You know, all the big time schools offer me. But Ohio State was all, once I went down to the shoe, once I got down, you know, went on my little visit and, you know, they had my jersey with my name on it. The number 8 was on it in the locker room and did a little tour. It was awesome, man. And so, you know, driving down 71, 2 hours, you know, 2 hours from my mom, 2 hours away from home and get back to South Euclid, Ohio whenever I wanted to. And, you know, my favorite color has always been red, scarlet, so to speak. And so, I mean, it was just everything. It was just perfect.
That's all right. And I forgot to mention a shout out to my man Maul G
and B-Ball Studio.
You know what I'm saying? That's his barbershop down in Cleveland. So I want to shout out Jamal and shout out to Rob Wilborn also, and all the other fellas from back home. I miss y'all. I know I'm sure Roy, you know, he sees y'all more than I do because he's in the States still. I moved away, but I miss all y'all though. But So you end up, you go to Ohio State, you playing for Tressel. I think you redshirted your freshman year there, but then Ohio State won the national championship. Is that right?
Yep. Freshman year, they won a national title.
What was that like being on a national championship team? That was the game where nobody gave the Buckeyes a chance against Miami. They were calling Miami the greatest team ever. It was similar to what the Cavaliers did against Golden State this year. It was, this team has no chance. This team doesn't belong, and this team is the greatest team we've ever seen. And the Buckeyes went into the Fiesta Bowl and beat them. What was that like being in that environment, being in that atmosphere for that game?
It really just foreshadowed the mission statement of the Driven Foundation, man. Just people counting you out, people saying you can't make it, and you have every reason to believe them and every reason to fall victim to your own thoughts and not feeling like you could be successful. But we didn't buy into the hype. And we knew that we had what it took to win, and we did a great job. We had great senior leadership and a great coach and a great mission and vision. And as methodical and as quote-unquote boring that people used to say our offense was, we played to our strengths. We played to our defense. We ran the ball with Maurice Clarke. We made some big plays with Michael Jenkins and Craig Krenzel. The offensive line did a great job, and then the defense always saved the day. And so the special teams did a great job, you know. We had a young kicker, and we just did a great job, man. So at the end of the day, you know, we did what we were supposed to do, and it was awesome. You come in as a freshman, you don't know what to expect. Even though I redshirted, I had a pretty big role just on scout team. They're like, Roy, you're going to be Kevin Winslow for the next 4 weeks during bowl practice, and we need you to play tight end. We need you to get our linebackers and our safeties prepared. As a young guy, you step into the challenge. I mean, even though a scout team and you got to wear somebody else's number and, you know, you're like, I'm not getting into the game. You understand that successful teams and successful companies and successful businesses and successful organizations from the top down, everybody has to do their part. And so, you know, you just have to do your job. Like, no matter what level you're on, I don't care if you're on the fries at McDonald's. Like, you need to be the best fry maker and the best fresh fry maker in the history of McDonald's. And because if you do, the customers going to keep coming back. So you got to do your job. And so I learned at an early age, like, it doesn't matter if it feel like you're not in the limelight or feel like you're not getting what you deserve or you feel like you should be in a better position. Like, if you just do your part, we'll be successful. And so when Kellen Winslow came out on that field, he did have 7 catches for like 100 yards. He didn't score a touchdown. And Will Allen and Mike Doss and Donnie Nicky, who were all safeties for us, came up and said, look, man, you gave us a great look. It prepared us for Kellen. He's a little bit bigger than you are, a little bit taller, maybe a little bit faster. He's going to be a first-round draft pick. But you can do what he can do. And that just kind of gave me confidence knowing that I could play at that level, but then also that I contributed to their preparation to win at the championship, man. So you just learn, man, that you got to do your part no matter what's going on and everything will work out.
That's incredible, man. That's a great story. And like you said, it goes back to what you said earlier, that it's not about you. It's about stuff, something that's bigger than you. And even though you were on the scout team, you still played a pivotal role in getting the team prepared to win that football game.
When you make it about you, that's cool. You could go down. You could be Charles Barkley. You could be a Hall of Fame guy. You could be Charles Barkley and be a Hall of Fame guy. And you can you be all NBA, all defensive NBA, but you ain't got no ring, though. You see what I'm saying? So you one of the greatest, but you don't have a ring. And so, yeah, I might not be one of the greatest wide receivers in Ohio State history. And maybe I only got 50-plus catches in, you know, as in my career. And I don't have 150. And I wasn't first-team All-American, and I wasn't a first-round draft pick, but guess what? I got a ring, though, because I did what I was supposed to do. And so if you want to be a championship team, if you want to have a championship ring, then you got to make championship and executive-type decisions, even when you're not in the position of the head man. So it was just an awesome lesson, man.
You could have picked any other athlete other than Charles Barkley, and I wouldn't have been mad at you, man. But Charles is my all-time favorite. I grew up loving Barkley back in the day. I still love him to this day. I was like, oh, why did he have to say Barkley? You could have said Dan Marino. You could have said anybody. But no, point well taken, though. And I remember, Craig Krenzel throwing a touchdown to Michael Jenkins in the Purdue game. You know what I mean? That was like a team of destiny, man. And Maurice the Beast just carrying the load and having a big game against Michigan and all that. And the play that he made after the interception in the national championship game where he stole the ball back. One of the most unbelievable plays I've ever seen on a football field to this day. And you and Maurice grew really close over the years. How did you guys get so tight?
I just happened to be available to help Maurice transition back when he was coming out, when he did his bid. And so Coach Trestle helped him get back in school at Ohio State. And at the time, I was towards the end of my football playing career. And I had just got released from the New Orleans Saints. I had tore some muscles in my hip, and I had to do some rehab for like 8 to 10 weeks. And so I was doing that down at the Ohio State campus, and it was around the same time that Maurice got out of prison. And, you know, I just happened to be lifting and working out in the weight room. He walked in with Coach Tress. We all came in together. So Maurice was, we were all in the same recruiting class.
Right.
And so, you know, we got in there. So obviously we had a relationship. But when you go away for 3 or 3.5 years, you know, you don't see somebody, whatever it may be. And so we just embraced, dapped up, and, you know, used to help him, you know, going back and forth from, you know, halfway crib to campus every day and just developing that relationship and just trying to help him get on his feet. Like, I'm one of those guys that I don't want nothing from you. Like, I don't need you for your money. I don't need you for your fame. I ain't going to try and use you. I just want to be a part of your life and how I can help at that particular moment. And so the Lord just used me to be available to help that brother with, you know, when he needed it. And, you know, when you're around somebody a long time, you develop a certain relationship with them. And, you know, that's just that.
What was you were on the ESPN 30 for 30, the Youngstown Boys special that profiled Maurice Claret and Jim Tressel. Obviously, Maurice had his issues, and like you said, he did a little time. Coach Tress kind of fell under fire at Ohio State and had an exit that was premature, you know, as far as what a lot of Ohio State fans would have expected. What do you think is the biggest misconception about both of those individuals?
I don't think that there is a misconception on Coach Tress. I think people know Coach Tress is being loyal. And so whenever you hear Coach Tressel's name down here, you rarely even hear. That's what you hear. He got a bad rap. And sometimes when you have a coach go out on quote unquote bad terms, they say, well, yeah, man, he shouldn't have did this, or, you know, he was out of line with this particular moment. You know, your character is going to drown out all negative things that people have about. Your character will drown out criticism if you're a man of integrity. And so some people try to act like they're a good person, but when you are a good person, like, criticism doesn't matter because your character is going to always outshine it. And so when you hear Woody Hayes, you think about how great he was. You don't think about how he exited. When you hear Jim Tressel, you think about how great he was and how much of a man of character and honesty and integrity he was. And so nobody's going to ever know exactly how everything went down with Coach Tress. I don't even really care. You know, he was my head coach. I have nothing negative to say about him other than I wish he was still the coach at Ohio State, meaning I'm not saying anything about Coach Meyer because I love Coach Meyer. That's my guy as well. I'm just saying that, you know, I know Coach Tress, and he would be doing a great job here at Ohio State if he was here as well. The misconception about Maurice is just people just think they know him, you know, and I feel like a lot of the things that this country is going through with opportunities and black and white, you know, why do people have less opportunity than this and that? If you're not in his shoes and you didn't grow up in his neighborhood and grow up with his circumstances and his challenges, then you don't know how to react. Like, Maurice is a survivor. He's shown everybody that he's a survivor. So he's not going to be down and stay down. He might get down, but he's going to be back up in a moment. And so people think they know a lot. Like, man, that kid threw his life away. Man, that kid should have did this. But, man, like, it ain't even about that. Like, it's about taking what you have and making the best out of your opportunities, no matter what it is. In his particular situation, the way he grew up, as you saw in 30 for 30, it was around drugs. And so if you're going to be the best, you might as well be the best drug dealer or be involved with the best. You know what I mean? But it's not necessarily your fault. Well, he made a bad decision. He didn't necessarily make a bad decision if that's all you know. It's just like we talked about earlier, Justin, as far as opportunities in the world. Like, if all you see is rappers, if all you see is athletes and entertainers, and that's all you thinking. If all you see is gangbanging and drug dealing, and 26-inch rims in the hood, and that's all you're going to think about. How can I get what they get? And so that's how it goes, man. And so the biggest misconception is he's this knucklehead, but he's one of the smartest dudes I know, very calculated, knows exactly what he's doing, when he's doing it, and that's why he continues to be successful off the field.
Have you spoken to either of them recently?
I saw Coach Tressel actually at an event in Youngstown. He spoke, and then I spoke after him. And so we were at an event probably about 2-3 months ago, but, you know, Coach Tressel is one of those guys, if you send him a text, he'll respond back. I know when Will Smith passed away, we were all in a group text and just kind of talking to each other and everything. So, Coach Tress is readily available, and I was just with Maurice at an event probably about 2 weeks ago. Me and Greg Oden, Maurice, Andy Katzenmoyer, did an event and appearance up in Lima, Ohio. And so both those guys are doing well, man. And Coach Tress was obviously the president of Youngstown State, man, so you can't beat that.
Right, right. He was. Those are some legendary names you just tossed out there, some legendary Columbus names that you was at that Lima event with. And I wanted to ask you about Will Smith also. So he was a teammate of yours. I think you guys were only teammates for 1 year. Is that right?
Who was that, Maurice?
No, I'm sorry, Will Smith.
Oh, Will, yeah. Two years, actually.
2 years. Did you know him well?
As well as you could know, you know, one of your senior and junior leaders. He was a guy that I, not only did I play with him at Ohio State, but when I was down in New Orleans for my short stint, you know, hey, if you need anything, let me know. Giving me directions and telling me where to go, where to stay away from. You know, you go out to dinner with the man, those types of things. And, you know, he was just a big brother, man. I remember when he first got drafted and he had a red Range Rover or something like that. And, you know, you just look up to him. You're like, man, one day, you know, he made it. You know what I'm saying? And you know, just being in the trenches with him, even my freshman year playing Kellen Winslow, he was a guy that used to throw me around. He was our starting defensive end. So, you know, it was just interesting to develop that relationship with him through, like, scout team and different things. But he always looked out for the young guys. And so when you're an upperclassman, you look out for the younger Buckeyes. And he used to look out for us, man. And, you know, he's obviously dearly missed, and it's unfortunate what happened. And, it just goes to show you, like I said earlier, it doesn't matter what you have. You know, it could be taken away from you at any given moment. So you got to do whatever you possibly can do to use your platform for purpose, man. Like, it's my whole lifestyle is purpose through platform. And so it don't matter whether you low or you high, you still got something to offer somebody else. And so while you're here, you got to make the most of it.
And, you know, there's no easy way to transition out of that. But obviously, the Will Smith incident was a tragedy. And so anybody who was a fan of the Saints and a fan of Ohio State was saddened to hear that news when it happened. I know I was. And I hope for the best for his family and his loved ones and his friends, including you, with dealing with his passing. But moving out of that, that sad situation, and then transitioning back into your career at Ohio State. So, obviously you start playing as a red shirt, sophomore, and then obviously moving into your junior and senior years, an incredible wide receiver class comes in after you that included the likes of Ted Ginn Jr. and Anthony Gonzalez and Brian Rubisky. You know, all those guys went to the league. You were a part of the team, obviously, that went to the championship game in 2000. The game was played in 2007, I guess. It was the 06 team. Troy Smith won the Heisman Trophy that year. You caught a touchdown in the Michigan game that year. What was that like, catching that touchdown that I think it tied the game up at 7 in the first quarter? And that, I remember that game very well. That was one of the individual singular games that stand out in my head the most when I think of the games that meant the most to me as a sports fan. Obviously, the Miami game in 03 is high on that list as well. Just growing up in Ohio, everybody's an Ohio State fan, so that game was a big one. Obviously, the stuff that the Cavs have done recently was major. But that run that Ohio State had that year, they were number one all season, and then you guys had Michigan. Michigan was number two. You guys met in the Horseshoe, and it was from just watching it on television, felt like one of the most electric atmospheres I've ever seen on a football field. What was it like playing in that game and catching a touchdown in that game?
It was absolutely awesome because it was senior day, my last game at the Horseshoe, and, you know, mom was on the field, and, you know, you get to be with your family and take a couple pictures beforehand. But whenever you got number one versus number two to see who goes to the national title and you playing that team up north, it's going
to
be an
Let me apologize for calling them Michigan also. I meant to call them the team up north. I didn't mean any disrespect, you know what I'm saying, the team up north.
Yeah, so it's okay. I mean, I said it a couple of times earlier just for your listeners because I know everybody's not from Ohio. So I just want to, I mean, you know, if you say that team up north and you from Florida, you might think you're talking about Georgia or something. You never know. So just make sure you let them know who I was talking about. But, you know, it was just a big game, number one versus number two. You know, we ended up winning 42-39. The game was a 3:30 kickoff, which was a little bit different for a November game. And especially for that game, because it's usually always traditionally a noon start. But since I think the magnitude of the game was so big, we tried to get some of those West Coast viewers to be able to watch it. But it started out as a game of sunlight, but by the second half, it was a night game. And so, right. You know, the lights were out, and it was just a great atmosphere, man. And I think we probably set the capacity or the record for most attended game in Ohio State history at that time. And obviously we played well, and all the receivers scored. I scored. Robo scored. Gonzo scored. Ted scored. Deanie Wells scored, and Pittman scored. Like, all of our offensive starting unit got into the end zone. So it was just an explosive offense that we had that year. You know, Gonzo ended up being a first-round draft pick that year. I got drafted in the fifth round. Teddy got drafted, you know, in the first round. So it was just a lot going on, man, which was absolutely great. And, you know, just the final game to open it up and be the guy that, you know, kind of was not necessarily forgotten about, but that opened that season up. I missed the first three or four games of the season with a high ankle sprain. Happened on the last play of the last drill training camp, and I was slotted as one of the three starters at the time. You miss your first four games and hobble back on the field, game four, game five, and don't really get into a rhythm until, you know, later in the season. So you don't have the numbers that you want. But to open up with three good catches on that drive and score the first touchdown of the game to tie it up, really a good experience for me, and definitely kind of gave me some momentum going into the offseason, going into preparations to go to the NFL.
Now, I want to ask you about the draft process, but before we get to that, the Florida game came, and it was kind of a reversal of the Miami game, where Ohio State was the heavy favorite going into that game. Troy wins the Heisman Trophy, and the perception was that Ohio State just kind of got lazy. You know, the rumor was Troy put on some weight. You know, the team was feeling itself, reading the press clippings, stuff like that. Ted got hurt at the beginning of the game. Do you think that, what do you think happened in that game, you know, that caused Florida to just come out and dominate Ohio State that night, unfortunately? Like, do you think it was any of those things that I mentioned a minute ago, or was it just scheme and they were just a better team that day? And do you think it would have been any different had Ted played the entire game? Because I know that that's a common thought as well amongst Ohio State fans.
Yeah, I think that it's some of those things. You know, the rumors and such I don't think are true. I think Troy was in great shape. I think we were prepared. I mean, we had a great 3 or 4 weeks of preparation and practice, and we had been used to going out and playing in Arizona. You know, that senior class had played 4 bowl games in Arizona. So it wasn't the weather. It wasn't the travel. It wasn't, you know, on a different stage. I mean, when you play at Ohio State, every game is under the microscope. And so I think we were prepared. We were good. I just think that when you playing in a game, sometimes things don't go the right way. Ted got hurt. You know, we celebrated with him. You know, I fall on him. A couple other people fall on him. As you know, he's out for the game. And so that definitely hurt you. You lose that vertical threat and everything that Ted brought to the game plan. But that didn't necessarily mean that we couldn't go out and do what was necessary to get the job done. It just didn't happen. And so it wasn't the offensive line's fault. It wasn't the loss of Ted's fault. It wasn't Troy's fault. Collectively, as a team, we just didn't get the job done, and for whatever reason. And so Coach Meyer did a great job doing what he does and game planning and plotting and strategizing and getting his guys ready to play. And as you can see, him on our side, you see what he's been able to do in 4 years. I think only losing maybe 4 games in the last 4 years. So you've been able to see how he's been able to motivate guys and get guys to play past their alleged limits. And so, you know, it was tough losing that game, your last game of your senior season. But, you know, it just flew by, because once that game was over, you go into draft preparation. And that's kind of how those seniors heal. You know, you go right after the game, you're like, hey, man, you got to fly to an all-star game or whatever it may be. And start to get ready for that draft process.
I can hear it in your voice, homie. You know, you don't sound like you all the way over that game, to be honest.
No, I mean, I'm good. Man, that game, I've been over that game, man. You lose, man. You win some, you lose some. Like I said, we got a ring. We got one. The seniors did. I felt bad for the younger guys, you know, but I'm not, you know, I'm not like waking up like, man, if I had to just caught one more ball. It's just, you're talking 10 years ago. It was an opportunity that we had, you know, and we didn't, you know, seal the deal on it. And, that's that. I mean, Coach Meyer and those guys got to raise the trophy. It is interesting. I watched the U on ESPN 30 for 30, and the second one highlighted that national championship game where Ohio State, where we beat Florida and Miami and how it altered the destiny of how great that team was supposed to be and different things. And so it is interesting to think about, okay, the what if, like, if we had a won, that would have been two national championship rings for us. How would it have changed, like, just perception of different players and draft status and stock and different things? But I mean, if you get caught up in the what ifs, man, like, you know, you'll never get anywhere in life. So, you know, things happen the way they were supposed to happen. And I'm just thankful that I had an opportunity to play in the game on a national stage and obviously use that to catapult me into being in a position to play in the league.
You're right about that, too, because just moving towards the draft that year, the 07 draft, you were picked in the fifth round, 169th overall by the Colts. I think you were, if I recall correctly, you were picked ahead of Troy Smith, even though Troy Smith was the highest. Yeah, Troy was the highest trophy winner. And I always felt like Troy got a raw deal in Baltimore because I remember he was kind of, they had drafted Joe Flacco, and then Troy was kind of penciled in to be the guy. They were going to give him his shot. He got sick. Right. Like he was a later draft pick. I mean, he probably would have been drafted way earlier had Ohio State won that game, I would imagine. And then he goes to Baltimore. He finally gets his shot. He gets sick just before the season, misses a couple games. Flacco ends up getting thrown in there, and then he never gets another chance again. So
that's just how the NFL works, though. I mean, that's just how sports work, you know. And unfortunately, you know, Troy got sick for whatever reason. And, you know, Joe Flacco ended up going there and playing well. He was drafted in the first round, I believe, and they let him play, and he actually played pretty decent. And so, you know, that's a business decision, and that's unfortunate. I mean, the same thing, like I said, basically happened to me at Ohio State, you know, my senior year. When I went down, Brian Robisky stepped up, and so I missed the first four games. You know, we used to call him Robo. Robo gets in there, and, you know, he balls out. You know, I remember in the Penn State game, he caught like a game-winning touchdown, probably about 50 or so yards out, a deep post route. And, you know, the rest is history. But when I get back, you know, I can't complain and say it was my spot. I need to be the starter now, but especially if you got somebody in there playing ahead of you. But that's where that team mindset comes in, that no matter who's playing, you know, you still got to play your part. So when you get in the game, you get in there and you ball, and that's that. And so all of us ended up getting drafted. Robo got drafted in the second round. Hartline got drafted in the fourth round. I was a fifth round draft pick. And Teddy and Gonzo went in the first round. And the year before that, Santonio went in the first round. So all of our receivers ended up going to the league, and that was the ultimate goal. And so that got accomplished.
That's an incredible list of receivers, man. Like, again, I just think back to that, those mid-2000 Buckeye teams with all those receivers and weapons. Ohio State was really loaded. But going into the draft process now, so you come out of the national championship game, and now, you know, you have to find an agent. Now you have to, I guess, get workouts scheduled. You know, you're thinking about where you're going to get picked. Teams are interviewing you. You got to go to the combine. You have to take the Wonderlic, possibly. Like, take me through that draft process, what that was like, what all you had to do. What is it that people don't know about the draft process or becoming or transitioning from a college player to a professional? What is it that people don't know about in that process that they might find surprising? And then what were you doing on draft day when you got the news?
The draft process is, I mean, it's long, it's somewhat boring at times. But the thing is, like, it's just you against, you know, yourself. And the only thing stopping you from performing is you. I mean, at that point in time, it's not about coaches. It's not about opportunity. It's not about anything other than, are you willing to train as hard and discipline yourself even more so than when you were playing at the collegiate level? Because now it's time to put on the show. I mean, it's the ultimate pressure situation when you got to run your 40-yard dash and you got, you know, 32 NFL executives, head coaches and general managers watching your every step, how you walk, how you talk, you know, how big your legs are, how big your arms are, you know, are you stiff? What kind of hips do you have? You know, do you make eye contact? I mean, it's an interview from the time you walk in and run your 40-yard dash to the time that you walk out. And so when you look up and see these guys that you see on TV watching you with stopwatches out to see how fast you run, You know, like, that's how you perform. And so it's not just a job interview. You talking to somebody and then you got to go in for a second interview or a third interview. You literally got to perform all these multiple drills in front of the people that's going to make the decision to draft you. And so, you know, for some people, they perform, and for some, they don't. It was just a great opportunity for me because I was able to get away from, you know, what my stats look like or what my numbers say or why I did or didn't play or what injuries I did or didn't have. I could just go out there and run and play and catch the football and do all these drills and go as hard as I can. And so I wanted to show people that I was just as athletic, just as fast, just as gifted as a lot of those guys that got a lot of the hype or whatever it may be, those guys that balled on the field. And so sometimes as an underdog and with that mentality, you got to come in and show what you have. And so when I showed up at 235 pounds, and you run back-to-back 4.340s, and you have a 39-inch vertical, and you broad jump 10.5 or whatever it was, and you catch everything thrown to you in the drills, now all of a sudden you're like, okay, I did what I was supposed to do. And so I'd already showed that I could run down on special teams and make a tackle, and I was versatile enough to maybe play a little bit of tight end if needed or whatever it may be, and it came in handy. And so that process is long, man. It's about 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks, 10 weeks. You know, and you're trying to figure out, you know, what you eat. You don't want to step off the curb the wrong way. And you only train for about 2 hours a day. So, you know, you got to stay out of trouble. You ain't going out and hanging out at bars and nightclubs. And, you know, you just got to really lock in. So it's a lot of movies, a lot of Chipotle and Subway, a lot of carrots and a lot of chicken and grilled chicken and broccoli. A lot of stuff that, you don't really want to do, but you got to do it in preparation to get to the next level.
Right. And what were you doing when you got the call from the Colts?
Yeah, I was at my mom's crib back in Cleveland, and you know, we didn't necessarily throw a big party, a draft party, so to speak. What we did was put ourselves in position to celebrate everything that was accomplished. You know, I believe I was the first in my family to graduate college, and you know, just to have the opportunity to make it to the league was special for us. And so we had some family over, but whether I had got drafted or I didn't really matter. You know, we were just celebrating family and celebrating life and celebrating just the accomplishment, knowing that I couldn't get to that level or even be in position to make it to the league without all my family and all my friends and all that support that I had. So we were just hanging out. I actually was playing basketball in the backyard with one of my little cousins and, you know, got that cell phone call from Bill Polian, who's a Hall of Fame general manager and president, so to speak, executive. And then I talked to Coach Tony Dungy, and he was like, hey, man, we're about to turn in our card. You know, you might want to watch your TV. And, you know, every young man's dream come true when they announce your name and show your highlights on the screen. And Mel Kiper almost got it right. He had me going in the fourth round to the Bengals, and I ended up going fifth round to the Colts. So he was kind of close. And it's amazing. Those guys pick, you know, the entire draft, but to say this guy can possibly go to this team around the fourth, fifth round is very, very accurate. So I had a feeling like, man, if Mel Kiper think I could get drafted in the fourth round, then there's a chance that I can get drafted. But I was prepared to be a free agent. It didn't really matter. I just knew that I was excited to be in that position and was able to celebrate with my family.
Very cool, man. And then obviously you go to Indianapolis, which is only, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours from Cleveland. So that was pretty cool that the family was pretty close. And you get there and there's this guy there that wears number 18 that basically built the franchise in that city, right? So his name is Peyton Manning. You're a rookie, fifth round pick, walking into the facility and you see Peyton Manning standing over there in the corner. What's that like to walk in? And then you see a legend just in front of you. And, you know, I assume you maybe caught a few passes from him in practice or whatever. Like, what was it like being around Peyton Manning? And is all the stuff they say about him, his legendary work ethic and preparation, is all that true?
All those things are true about Peyton. And then some. He's just a workaholic. And really, if you're not willing to put in the work or you don't have the productivity that he has, then, you know, you're not really one of his guys that he talks to all the time. Like, he's not arrogant, but he's just all about his business. Like, he takes football to a whole nother level. You know, like, it's not just a game where you get to come in and do whatever you want to. Like, he literally wants to be the best, and he wants you to be the best that you could possibly be, which is a good thing. It just takes time to build that rapport with him if you're not on the field. And so I tried to, as much as I could, while I was healthy. I got injured a lot in the league. But while I was on the field, I tried to give my all and ask questions and engage with him. But, that first time you meet him, his locker was almost literally right across from mine. I mean, you just starstruck, man. You're like, man, this guy is the guy that you see on TV. He's the guy that you watch on the commercials. He's the guy that, won Super Bowls and balled out. And you're like, man, like, this is my quarterback now. But then you start to realize that he has 13 or so years or however many years of information and wisdom and knowledge of the game. Then you do, you come in, hot shot rookie, but you ain't done nothing. You don't know nothing. And
right.
So, you really got to humble yourself and just take whatever he says and use it to your advantage, man. But it was good just being on a winning team with Coach Tony Dungy and just people of high character and high values and morals and a faith-filled team. And that's why we won a lot of games while we're in Indianapolis and why they continue to win.
Was there any story that you remember or example that you can think of where maybe like Indy was down at halftime and Peyton came in and gave a rah-rah speech, or did he ever have to cuss out the receiving corps because they wasn't doing their thing? Maybe not literally cuss out, but you know what I'm saying? Like, was there anything like that transpired when you were there with him?
Nah, Peyton really, like him and the offensive line, like that's where the heavy discussions came from. But the receivers, Marvin, Reggie, Dallas, he didn't really have to talk to those guys. They knew what they needed to do. Whatever adjustments needed to be made, it might be one little quick conversation, but nothing to where they're disrespecting each other or Peyton is lean. Like he was a leader, but we had other leaders on that team as well. And so, I mean, that's why you see Marvin Harrison going into the Hall of Fame and Coach Tony Dungy going into the Hall of Fame, because we had leaders on that team outside of just Peyton. And so, that's one thing about the league, man. You do your job. Like if you do your job, everything will take care of itself. And so it really wasn't about, hey man, tell this dude to do this and that and the other. It's like, if you didn't do your job, they would just find somebody that could do it. It was that simple. And that was Coach Dungy's philosophy. He said, being a professional is knowing what to do and doing it. Nothing more, nothing less. So that means that you don't have to give and try and do somebody else's job. You don't have to try and, make up something on the fly. Like, whatever I told you to do, just go out and do that. Because if you do that, we'll execute. And so everything about the Indianapolis Colts offense is based on efficiency. And if you do your part and I do my part, then there's no reason why this play is going to be successful. And so, Peyton kind of did his thing, but Marvin did his thing, Reggie did his thing, but we were all on the same page because we knew what our individual parts were supposed to do. So, the heart in the human body, your heart's not saying, hey, right toe, like, you need to do your job. Like as soon as the heart starts thinking about the right toe, you're going to have a heart attack and it's a wrap. So, you need your heart to keep pumping. You need your feet to keep moving. And everybody need to do their part, and everybody would be okay.
So as you all can see, we are now up to an hour and 8 minutes. And guess what? The interview just keeps going. Warren Hall was such a dope guest, y'all, that we had to keep the conversation going. So we go into overtime on this podcast with Warren Hall. So we'll have to cut this one short right here, but part two will be out soon. Everybody go ahead and please check out hiphopsportsreport.com. Of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher. Let us know what you thought of Roy and his interview with the Driven Foundation. If you have any questions about it, you can go hit up his website. That would be staydriven.org for the Driven Foundation. And of course, royhallmotivates.com for Roy's motivational site. And then, of course, you can find him on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Roy_Hall. And please go ahead and check him out. Thank you for your time, Roy. Thank you all for listening. Again, twitter.com/HHS Report, facebook.com/HHS Report is our site. Stay tuned for part two, y'all. Peace.